Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD, and we come to you each week to discuss the personal politics of health. Ever watch those science fiction films from the 50s with the giant reptiles and insects who were exposed to radiation and grew huge enough to crush a city? After today's show, you may wish that those films were true. Our environment is contaminated by nuclear fission products, not only from early bomb testing, but currently from nuclear reactors and depleted uranium munitions used across the globe. Nuclear energy is being sold as clean energy, yet children growing up in the shadows of these reactors are carrying thousands of times higher amounts of radioactive strontium in their bones than what's allowed by any regulatory commission. And yes, they are dying of cancer. Join me as we honor nuclear activists here and abroad who remember the effects of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and are fighting to end the proliferation of all nuclear products. Today, the health effects from radiation from all sources with Dr. Ernest Sternglass. First, an editorial about this week's health news with Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. Last week, the media reported that researchers based at Kaiser Permanente found an association between cholesterol levels in middle-aged people and the risk for those people of developing Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia in old age. I thought, geez, these people can't leave it alone. So I'd like to propose a cholesterol theory of my own. Cholesterol causes obsessive and myopic behavior among researchers. Here's what the Kaiser researchers report. First, borderline levels as well as high levels of cholesterol increase the risk of Alzheimer's and other dementias. The researchers were impressed with the statistics, saying that they showed cholesterol to be a, quote, significant risk factor, end quote. Nonsense. The worst statistic was this. People with cholesterol above 240 milligrams per deciliter at midlife had a relative risk for Alzheimer's in old age of 57%. What that means is that out of 1,000 people with desirable cholesterol below 200 milligrams per deciliter, about 40 developed Alzheimer's, while out of 1,000 high cholesterol above 240 milligrams per deciliter, about 63 people developed Alzheimer's. Not very impressive. And no one, especially the media, seems to notice that having so-called desirable cholesterol is not a free pass. Second, the researchers have no idea how cholesterol might cause dementia. They just found an association between cholesterol levels at midlife and the incidence of dementia in later life. This is like asking, why is it raining? And being told, because water is falling from the sky. Nevertheless, a new story is in the cholesterol myth has been added. Cholesterol causes dementia. This report prompted me to pick up a medical classic. Jens Müller's Cholesterol, Interactions with Testosterone and Cholesterol in Cortisol in Cardiovascular Diseases, published in 1987 and based on Müller's decades of research and clinical practice. Let's start at the beginning. Cholesterol is good for you. It plays a number of critical roles in your body's biochemistry. Of particular importance, cholesterol is the molecule your body uses to make cortisol and testosterone. In turn, your body makes estradiol from testosterone. Both men and women have all three of these hormones. The significance of cholesterol, cortisol, and testosterone for Müller was that they regulate one another. Cortisol increases in response to stress, whether internal or external. Among other actions, it causes conversion of protein to glucose in what is called a catabolic process. Catabolic processes shift cell metabolism from aerobic, that is, oxygen-using, to anaerobic energy production, that is, in the absence of oxygen. It was Müller's contention that this shift is at the core of the metabolic mischief that presents as cardiovascular disease. On the other hand, testosterone is anabolic. It builds tissue and promotes aerobic energy production. When things are working well, cortisol and testosterone are in balance, as is their precursor, cholesterol. When cortisol increases due to stress, the body increases the supply of cholesterol in order to increase testosterone and bring the body back into balance. If the processes that cause the imbalance persist, this system degenerates and remains out of balance. So, high cholesterol means that your body is under stress and is trying to restore balance. Based on that science and his own extensive clinical practice, Miller successfully treated heart patients with testosterone. His arguments and evidence are compelling. His work has been completely ignored. If someone's ideas don't fit with the scientific establishment deems acceptable, and these respected experts have no arguments against those ideas, they simply don't talk about them. Although that's a moral to the story, it's hardly one worth following. However, there's another moral from Mueller's book that is worth following. Conventional research and practice don't distinguish between pathology and physiological degeneration. Pathology is caused by disease. Physiological degeneration is an accelerated version of the decline experienced by all organisms, often captured by the word aging. Pathology is how an organism responds to a disease agent, such as a virus. Physiological degeneration is a process that the organism experiences internally and is often made worse by environmental factors, such as social inequity. Cholesterol is not a disease agent. Alzheimer's disease is not a disease. With a disease, we need to help the body defend itself. With aging, we need to help the body restore balance. That the very smart people who do these studies that perpetuate the cholesterol myth are unable to figure this out doesn't mean that you and I can't. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett, PhD, is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is the primary author of our new book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. And now let's get to our topic for today, which is health effects of radiation from all sources. Our guest is Dr. Ernest Sternglass. He is a PhD and has been a professor emeritus of radiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine since 1983. He's held professorships in radiology and physics at several universities, including Stanford, Indiana University, and the Institut Henri Pasteur in France. Dr. Sternglass was the director of the Apollo Lunar Scientific Station program while at Westinghouse Research Laboratories, and his doctorate in engineering physics from 1953 comes from Cornell University, as does his postgraduate and undergraduate degrees in engineering physics and electrical engineering. He taught physics at George Washington University and held a research fellowship at Cornell University. Dr. Sternglass has received many academic and professional honors, is a member of several professional societies, and holds 13 patents. He is the author of several books on low-level radiation and has carried out extensive studies on the health effects of low-level radiation, and is the author of Secret Fallout, Low-Level Radiation from Hiroshima to Three Mile Island, published by McGraw-Hill in 1981. Dr. Sternglass has testified on low-level radiation before the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy and many other groups here and abroad. Born in Berlin, Germany, he left as a teen when his parents, both physicians, fled from the Nazis. In 1947, he met Albert Einstein and shared his ideas with him. We're very honored to welcome you back to the show. We had Dr. Sternglass on several weeks ago talking about the health effects specifically of depleted uranium. Today we're going to concentrate on the health effects of all exposures. Welcome to you again, Dr. Sternglass.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get into the specifics of about where and how we're getting exposed to radiation, let's explain the difference between health effects from X-ray, medical X-ray radiation, and from nuclear fission products.
Yes, that's very important because all of us, including myself, were misled by the fact that 100 years' worth of studies of X-rays seem to show relatively little effects. I mean, you had to have large doses in order to create a cancer or to cause a death would be enormously high. But what we didn't understand is that when nuclear fission takes place and these new elements appear that never appeared on Earth before, like strontium-90 and cesium-137, that these elements are actually tiny atoms that concentrate through the food chain and get into our system and then concentrate in certain organs in the body. and give very large local doses to the specific organs. Like, for instance, iodine 131 goes to the thyroid, and it produces hundreds of times more of a dose to the thyroid than if the same amount of iodine were spread on the ground or were uniformly distributed throughout the body. So we fail to understand this, and I think this has been one of the most serious problems that now faces our society.
I need you to back up for a minute. You used the term iodine, and I think you ought to distinguish between the type of iodine that people take in a vitamin pill or put on their skin.
Right. I'm talking about radioactive iodine,
thank you,
of course.
Okay.
Which, and I'm always talking about radioactive strontium-90, radioactive cesium-137,
okay,
which emit particles like electrons with sometimes a half a million volt, able to break many bonds, and also they emit gamma rays, which are sort of like powerful X-rays. So when these get into certain organs, they give local doses to the immediate area within a few millimeters, which are much larger than, you know, if it were uniformly distributed throughout the whole body.
Now, we talked a bit on the phone about how doctors have remained somewhat distant or resistant to the news about radiation in general and X-rays specifically. As you know, I've had Dr. John Goffman on the air several times talking about the fact that he did these two very long studies, and he used, in order to study the effects of X-ray radiation on the human body, he couldn't dose people with it. He had to use statistics from medical intervention and compare the death rates. But what he found was that, in fact, there is no safe dose of X-ray radiation. He doesn't say that people whose lives depend on the use of an X-ray should avoid it, but he does say that people should avoid X-ray at all costs because, among other things, he's discovered that it damages the heart muscle, along with giving people, you know, potentially giving them cancer. So, but what you're saying is very important, because what we're saying here is that although we now know from John Goffman's esteemed work that no dose of X-ray radiation is safe, what we're talking about with nuclear fission products is actually pieces being sort of staying in the body and continuing to sort of damage the organs. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Strontium 90 has a half-life. It disappears, decays, and half of it in about 28 years. So if it gets into the bone, it stays there for quite a long time, although it's gradually removed as calcium is exchanged in the bone. And so there is a decline with time, but very slow. So once we've taken in strontium 90 with our milk or our drinking water, which behaves like calcium and concentrates in bone, then, of course, there will be an increased risk of damage to the bone and damage especially to the white cells, to the cells of the immune system, and the progenitors of all the blood cells, which are always found in bone marrow. So this is where we have such an unexpectedly large effect of strontium 90, because it affects the operation of the immune system by damaging or mutating cells that give rise to all the blood cells.
I might mention that I spoke with Dr. Richard Cunyon about this, because at the end of the show I want to give people some instructions on, you and I both will be giving people some instructions on how to attempt to protect themselves aside
right.
from prudent avoidance. But his observation is that patients who have been exposed to radiation both from X-ray and also from CAT scans or medical isotopes end up with chronically low white blood counts that never change throughout their lives.
Huh.
So,
well, there are studies that show significant effects for a long time after this has happened, because if you mutate the stem cells that give rise to all the blood cells, then, of course, it's going to take a long time, and it may never completely heal.
Well, and in fact, DNA damage, which radiation does precipitate or does cause, is often, if I'm not mistaken, passed on from generation to generation, which is why we see so much children who are born with terrible disabilities.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we do know that to some degree that individuals who have been exposed to fairly high levels of radiation are likely to have children who are more likely to develop childhood cancer. It's not the biggest source. The biggest source is direct exposure of the baby in the mother's womb when the cells are rapidly dividing, and that's when humans and all animals are most sensitive.
You had wanted me to mention also, and I, of course, feel very strongly about this, that in the pressure for diagnosis among physicians, the sort of standard of care is to use CAT scans. And as some people have indicated, a CAT scan will deliver almost the amount, or at least it's been compared, to the amount of radiation someone a mile and a half from ground zero in Hiroshima would have received.
Yes, and unfortunately, a CAT scan involves multiple X-rays from many different directions, which are used to compute and picture a cross-section of the body. It's very important in certain conditions, but merely to use it for screening on an annual basis or regularly is certainly an overexposure that can have very serious side effects, and especially in children. Often the children are given CT scans because the doctor wants to be sure about a diagnosis, and he's worried about lawsuits if he doesn't properly diagnose a case. So there's great pressure on physicians to use X-rays, often to much more than one really should use them. And that's a sad story.
Well, I think that patients can advocate for an MRI, which in many cases will give you some or all of the same kind of picture. I mean, I know there are certain conditions where they can't see the same. I also know that there are certain conditions where you can actually just use ultrasound.
Absolutely. Ultrasound and MRI are now known to be much more benign than ionizing radiation like X-rays, and which are used in CT scans.
Now, before we leave the medical use of radiation, let's talk a bit about medical isotopes, because my observation is that when a patient is given instructions afterwards, among other things, they're told to segregate themselves in terms of using a different bathroom and not allowing people in their family to be exposed to their excrement. On the other hand, they're saying, this is fine, don't worry, this is perfectly harmless, but don't let anybody use the same toilet as you do for about 24 hours. Do you want to take on the issue of medical isotopes?
Yes, I'll talk about it briefly. Some radioactive isotopes are very important in diagnosis and often even in treatment of certain conditions. In other words, if you want to destroy the thyroid because it's abnormal or cancerous, then you can give radioactive iodine, and it will concentrate there and preferentially destroy the tissue of the thyroid. But that means that you're going to be exposed and carry in your body quite a lot of radioactivity, which is going to take a while to be excreted. And so it's true that one should then be certainly not to be too close to other people for some time. Fortunately, this excretion is fairly rapid, but nevertheless, that's one of the conditions where one has to be careful. And the other uses are diagnostic. I myself had procedure used to detect some lung problem many years ago, and it was important that it was done, but it should only be done when absolutely necessary. And then there are it's always a small risk of some side effects. But fortunately, this is not nearly as serious as when you have things in your diet which from day to day keep giving you more radioactive cesium-137, radioactive strontium, radioactive cobalt, God knows what. So many hundreds of isotopes are produced in the fission product.
Incidentally, with all due respect, I would like to offer to people that if they are given as a treatment option a radioactive isotope, that they should really do their homework. I do believe that there are alternatives often to treating with isotopes. So I would just recommend that people not jump ahead without doing some research ahead of time, because I really honor Dr. Goffman's work, and what he has recommended is that people to whatever extent they can, avoid the use. And as you say, if you're choosing between a life and death situation and it may save your life, then you may be willing to take the risk, but you should think about it very carefully. So going back to the ambient natural, let me back up. The government always talks about, you know, our exposures and compares the exposures to examples of ambient natural exposure, you know, like being in an airplane exposes you to radiation. This is how they sort of calm people down about the amount of radiation. In
right.
fact, when people go for an X-ray, they often will ask, how much radiation am I going to be exposed to? And they'll say, oh, no more than an airplane ride, which is not an answer.
That's right. But typically, it is true that we are exposed normally and have been for millions and millions of years to small amounts of continuous emissions from radioactive rocks like uranium and radium in the soil. We've been exposed to cosmic rays, which come down from both from the sun and from even more distant stars, and are constantly bombarding us. But the typical dose is in the use that we used to use, 100 millirads a year, sort of average between, something between 80 and 150, depending on where you live and the altitude and so on. But one thing that we have to understand, these natural isotopes have been around so long that we have adapted to them much more than we have to the man-made new isotopes that don't normally exist on Earth, like strontium-90 only exists for 28 years, and iodine-131 for only about a week. So these isotopes we've never experienced before, and therefore they are not exactly comparable with the normal background radiation. So it's not really fair to compare, because these concentration of these isotopes, like iodine-131, the radioactive type, all going to the thyroid, makes it very different from anything that comes from the outside in the body, which irradiates the whole body uniformly.
I just want to remind people you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with physicist Dr. Ernest Sternglass, STERNGLASS. And as far as I know, you do not have a website.
Yes, we do have a website called radiation.org, which describes our findings of how, for instance, baby teeth can be used to, when they are lost at ages 6 to 12, when these teeth are examined, we can detect how much strontium 90 there was in the bone of the child, because the baby teeth reflect what was in the bone when the child was in the mother's womb and in the first few years of life. So that gives us a way of measuring it, and that's discussed on our website, radiation.org, and you can obtain information there, anyone can, to how to send in baby teeth so that we can study them. We have now studied over 4,000 individual baby teeth across the nation. And we find that, unfortunately, strontium 90 has started to rise again in the last since the mid 80s and 90s of this last century, in some cases are as high, in a few cases, as high as it was during the height of nuclear bomb testing back in the late 50s and early 60s. So we are in a situation where we can now at least have an indication of whether or not we and our children are being poisoned by radioactive releases from the happy, clean, too cheap to meet a nuclear plants.
Well, in fact, there are now two articles that we can discuss. One is the one you brought to my attention and also appeared locally in our papers about the scurrilous protocol at Florida Power and Light.
Oh, yes.
And the childhood cancers, that the case of They were cleaning up mops in the sink. Nobody was ever told how to do things properly at this facility. And so the area around was terribly polluted, and children are dying of cancer, and you've been involved with testing the teeth and whatnot in that. And then in today's San Francisco Chronicle, I'm sure this was carried across the country, error at lab spreads nuclear material, contamination from Los Alamos found in four states. Another just unbelievable situation of contamination all over the place from Los Alamos. So we're looking at just appalling protocols in these labs. And this is, you know, I think even people who are astute and suspicious don't realize how sloppy and underregulated this is. So is this where most of the, I mean, you were responsible for, in part with many other people, but you were primarily responsible for getting the testing stopped in the U.S. So we at least stopped exploding bombs here. But I have to think not only leftover material from those tests still resides everywhere, but now we have these power plants just polluting the water source and the groundwater and just everything all over the place. So is this where we're seeing the radiation come from?
I'm afraid so. Our studies show that in recent years, the greatest increase in strontium 90 in the baby teeth has occurred downwind within 50 miles or so of many nuclear reactors in the country. So far, every one that we have made measurements at, and where we have enough baby teeth to be able to be statistically significant, we can see that after the plant started, strontium 90 in the baby teeth rose. And that is unfortunate, because small amounts of radioactivity are very harmful for the developing child and produce not only cancer, but retardation and developmental problems. There's also the fact that when mothers, and that's recently described in an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, when mothers receive even small amounts of scattered radiation to the thyroid during pregnancy, mm-hmm. when they get dental x-rays, there's a greater risk of premature delivery and early child delivery in which the baby is born underweight. And when babies are born underweight, they have many more problems later in life. And that is one of the most serious situations, possibly even more serious than childhood cancer and other conditions, because the development of the newborn and all the possible effects on behavior and all these things, and intelligence, all these things are so important for our society. We cannot go on, damaging our newborn and hope to compete with societies that don't have so many nuclear reactors releasing radioactivity like China.
Yeah, I might add that in my own practice, what I see is a remarkable number of people who have dental x-rays without a thyroid collar, without a lead apron that actually has a collar that goes around their neck. And in addition, I've from my own research, I've discovered that if a woman becomes pregnant and her thyroid levels are not robust and healthy, the child, in fact, the brain of the child will develop abnormally, and there'll be lots of problems. You also mentioned the autism issue.
That's right. Autism is another problem that we have now been able to track in California through the differences in 58 counties, which have been studied for many decades. And we find that in counties near the counties where a nuclear reactor started, the rate of autism increases. And where a nuclear reactor was shut down, like near Sacramento, the rate of increase slowed down. And at the same time, we find baby teeth confirming these patterns. So we really have a tragic situation with regard to autism and similar developmental disorders, which, of course, last a lifetime and cause a family enormous concern and enormous financial cost and efforts to treat and take care of the individuals who have been affected.
Additionally, anecdotally in my practice, the other thing that I've observed is that we have an entire generation starting from probably the 40s to now who all have thyroid disease of one sort or another. There is just a rampant amount of thyroid disorder and thyroid disease everywhere.
And recently, I've given a paper at the AAAS meeting in Washington, D.C. in February, in which I showed that the hypothyroidism, which is a condition at birth, diagnosed at birth, that the child's thyroid is underfunctioning, that this is highly correlated and rose exactly in step within a year or two of the rises in the amount of nuclear energy generated per nuclear reactor in the nation, which has unfortunately been rising a lot because each reactor is being pushed harder and harder with less time for maintenance and inspection and repair in order to maximize the profit. And as a result, there are more releases of radioactive iodine and other deleterious isotopes into the environment. And that is unfortunate because our society is always, you know, controlled by the desire to maximize profit of the corporations. And this is a pollutant which doesn't, can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, and it's therefore much easier to hide than, you know, big diesel smoke coming out of a dirty truck. So we are really at the mercy of people who are supposed to look after us, but often they are motivated by profit.
We need to take a brief break. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm on the air with Dr. Ernest Sternglass, S-T-E-R-N-G-L-A-S-S. He is one of the primary people involved in stopping nuclear testing in the United States. You can go to his website where he discusses the study with baby's teeth and other things that are important for you in terms of radiation exposure and health at radiation.org. We're going to take a brief minute break here, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with our interview. Please stay with us.
Gone from painful cries, away from sad and nice, along with him I'll buy, cause they won't go when I go.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. This is Lena Berman, and I am on the air today with Dr. Ernest Sternglass, S-T-E-R-N-G-L-A-S-S. His website is radiation.org. There is information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our brand new book, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number is 707-874-2772, and to get more information about the book, you can dial 707-874-1496. And we're doing a show on the health effects of radiation from all sources. And we've been talking about how pollution from the power plants, the so-called safe energy here, is polluting the environment. We have other sources of radiation also coming, as we mentioned in the last show we did about the depleted uranium, blowing across from across the globe, coming to us as well. So the contribution to environmental causes of disease of radiation. You want to make a final sort of blanket statement about that? Or?
Yes, I would say that today, looking at all the statistics we've gathered and all that we've learned in the last 15, 20 years, that today radiation from nuclear power plants and past nuclear testing has been the greatest single contribution to the rise of chronic diseases and cancer and diabetes and asthma and all the conditions that suddenly began to rise in the mid-80s and have in some cases doubled, and no one knows why. And that, by the way, includes allergies, which were just discussed in the opening of this program. because allergies are affected by damage to the immune system.
That's
and that's
right.
exactly what strontium 90 and strontium 89 and barium 140, these radioactive substances, do. They concentrate in bone and damage the cells of the immune system, and therefore you get an increase not only in chronic diseases but in infectious diseases, because the white cells fight bacteria and viruses, and you get increases in allergies, you get autoimmune diseases increasing, and as a result, all types of diseases are increased, not just cancer, and not just congenital defects, which is what the International Commission on Radiation Protection has always been focusing on. But as a result of recent studies by the Independent European Committee on Radiation Risk, which, by the way, just published a wonderful report, a European committee that can be looked at the website called www.urodcom.org.
Can you do that again?
Urodcom, E-U-R-A-D. com.org, and that website has a summary of the main results, and I can read you what it says. It's just astounding. The committee concludes that the present cancer epidemic is a consequence of exposures to global atmospheric weapons fallout in the period 59 to 63, and that more recent releases of radioisotopes to the environment from the operation of the nuclear fuel cycle will result in significant increases in cancer and other types of ill health. And in fact, using both the ECRR's new model and that of the International Commission on Radiation Protection, the committee calculates the total number of deaths resulting from the nuclear project since 1945, when the first bombs were detonated. And the ICRP calculation that, you know, for doses to the population up to 1989, given by the United Nations, resulted in 1,173,600 deaths from cancer. But the ECRR model, which now considers the much higher dose from internal isotopes, predicts 61,600,000 deaths from cancer alone, and 1,600,000 infant deaths, and 1,900,000 fetal deaths. And in addition, they talk about the general decline in human health. So we are seeing an epidemic that is caused by our unfortunate inability to fully anticipate the terrible effects of fission products on our system that are so much more serious than ordinary X-rays.
Well, and it's interesting to note also that the government there's been a sort of kind of allowing of the idea that there are some pollutants in the environment. People sort of, there's sort of the blame the victim thing is what I'm getting to, that if people would just clean up their diets and eat whole foods and be this or that and just eat vegetables because it accumulates in animal stuff, which actually doesn't, eating vegetables doesn't completely protect you either, because as we will discover in a moment, the irrigation water is contaminated. But anyway, that as long as we were dealing with situations that were so-called lifestyle diseases, where if people would just eat carefully and spend some extra money to get good food and avoid, you know, this and that, that they'd be fine, because the larger issue requires that the entire structure of how we produce energy has to be changed, and lots of other things as well. So it's a nice screen for, you know, blaming sort of environmental pollution is kind of a nice screen. Incidentally, just want to say that website again for people that you were reading from. It's EURADCUM.
COM.
COM. EURADCUM.org.
Yes.
Okay. And then lastly, I just neglected also to say, if people missed parts of today's show and want to get a copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can certainly go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, to get a copy, or you can call my information number 24 hours, 707-874-2772. One last thing, if you will allow me. What we're seeing also, I think, in terms of health is as you mentioned, this issue with the allergies, the general immune system collapsing. And I would pose that, again, talking to Richard Cunyon, one of the things that he sees is that there's this problem with the detoxification pathways are completely hosed up, and he's confounded to understand why there's all this DNA damage, why the methylation pathways are destroyed, and why this is all happening. And when I called him to talk about radiation, I could hear the lights going off in his head, and it's been my suspicion all along that this was so. So tell us about how it is that the stuff is drifting, because there are people, people are very confused why in areas like in Marin County in California, where people are eating organic and they're doing all this great stuff, that they have the highest rate of cancer. And you were explaining how these very tall mountains of the Sierras kind of catch the stuff, and explain that to us.
Yes, this is really what's been happening. We always have known for many, many years that 90% of the radioactivity in the atmosphere from bomb testing comes down with rain and snow. And so wherever rain and snow is high, like on the mountaintops in the Sierras, there's a lot of this stuff coming down, and it immediately runs into the rivers that feed the San Joaquin Valley rivers. And so we are, in the sense of in this sense, very heavily exposed first during the time of nuclear bomb testing, and then when many nuclear reactors began to operate and release large amounts of radioactivity, especially in the early 70s, and those radioactive releases occurred from the stacks, and they go to the mountains, and there it comes down and gets back into the valley. It gets back into the rivers, and it gets into the irrigation canals that are so important in the San Joaquin Valley. And then we eat the fruit and eat the vegetables and drink the milk that is contaminated by the water that came down from the clean mountains. They're clean, but unfortunately, because of strontium-90 and other isotopes coming down so heavily with the rain and snow, are heavily produced when the winds first reach the Sierra Mountains. And that gives us a situation where we have, rivers that are ordinarily look perfectly clean and yet are poisoned by this silent radioactivity.
And this is nationwide, I have to say.
And this is nationwide, but because California serves as a vegetable and
food basket
for the nation, it affects the whole nation to some degree. Of course, the people in immediate areas are even more strongly affected. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we neglected to mention is that many of the nuclear plants, especially the new ones built at in San Luis Obispo, the Diablo Canyon, have reported large amounts of releases into the ocean on the idea that, what gets into the ocean is going to be so diluted there's no problem. Unfortunately, the ocean currents go from north to south, and they carry the radioactive releases from these nuclear plants like Diablo Canyon all the way into Santa Barbara and all the way into L.A. and Ventura, and the people live near the beaches. And Chris Busby in Wales has found that around the beaches near nuclear plants in England and Wales, there are much higher concentrations of cancer incidents in those areas near the shore within a few miles. And now we find the same thing in California. We find that Santa Barbara childhood cancer rates between age 0 and 19 almost doubled, something like an increased 97% in the period that was studied between about 1982-83-84 and 1993-94. And during that period, the cancer rate in that area of California nearest the coast almost doubled, where it declined for the state as a whole and for the U.S. as a whole.
Hmm. Well, it's pretty overwhelming.
Well, it's all in the Center for Disease Control Statistics. Mm-hmm. Anyone can go to cdc.org. The website is the Wonder website, and all the statistics for each and every county, for every major cause of death and by age group is all available. And the government knows it, but nobody pays any attention to it.
So is anybody actually studying the food supply to see if there's evidence of contamination?
Yes. The major thing that was always studied for many years was the milk supply, mm-hmm. because milk turned out to be the biggest vector, the biggest way in which people were getting the radioactivity quickly from the farm into their homes. And unfortunately, the government stopped measuring the milk for the many radioactive materials like iodine-131 and strontium-90, barium-140 every month in 60 locations. They stopped in 1993. And this should be resumed. And we should call for it because this has been a great warning. And we were able to show that state by state, infant mortality and the death of the fetal death, miscarriages, were directly related to the amount of strontium-90 measured in the milk by our government, by the EPA. And that, of course, caused them to stop measuring because they wanted to promote further nuclear bomb testing, and they wanted to promote and protect the nuclear industry. And they don't want the public to understand that nuclear weapons are so useless because when they are used anywhere in the world, the radioactivity in the atmosphere drifts back and harms our own children and our own elderly people. And no government wants to admit that it made these terrible mistakes of detonating hundreds of nuclear bombs during the bomb test years of the 1950s and early 60s. And they are worried about lawsuits that like the people in Utah brought when their cancer rates rose downwind from the Nevada test site. And so we are unfortunately in a situation where national security dictated secrecy, and that has poisoned our whole atmosphere because no one can now rely on what the government tells you, because the government is one of the worst polluters.
Well, face-saving aside, it's very hard to wrap my brain around the idea that they're now using nuclear munitions in Iraq that are far worse than anything we ever saw with just an atom bomb. It's so hard, and we're sending these soldiers back with it.
And so much is released on the ground in very, very fine particles, which are able to go through the brain, into the brain through the barrier that normally keeps things out of the brain. It gets into the lung and concentrates in bone and the lymphatic system. And so we really have, because we built all the bombs, we had this leftover uranium. It was very cheap. And so the government essentially gave it free to the people who made ammunition.
So we're saving the world. We're making it all democratic and sort of actually dead at the same time. I should mention, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman on the phone with Dr. Ernest Sternglass, Sterngglass. If you want to look at more information from him, it's on radiation.org. He also gave out the website eurad.com for some information from Europe. The present energy bill, doesn't it encourage the development of more reactors?
Yes, it is supposed to do that. It is going to give tax credit and loan guarantees and other forms of insurance to companies that want to build more nuclear reactors. But fortunately, and that is, we have to keep hoping, because people who invested in this area of building nuclear plants got burned because there were enormous cost overruns and very great costs of building nuclear plants. So there may not be the capital available. Wall Street may not agree with the White House that this is the best way to generate electricity, and therefore many new coal plants are being built, which are being equipped with ways to greatly reduce the emissions of carbon dioxide. And in fact, they have found a new technique that they're now beginning to implement where they can drill a hole into the ground, deep into the ground, and find a rock formation into which they can pump the exhaust from the coal and get the carbon dioxide fixed in the rock, so that it won't lead to climate warming.
Well, Europe is using solar energy at a great pace.
Absolutely.
They're hugely outpacing us. I mean,
yes.
Like 3-1 to what
Absolutely.
We're doing here. So there's lots of room for improvement here.
Oh, and wind energy is coming big.
Yes.
Big articles in the New York
Times. Just have to be careful.
China is building a huge number of, planning to build the equivalent of 20 giant nuclear plants in terms of wind power. And so hopefully, just like England and many other countries and Germany and Denmark, wind energy is another very promising
form of energy. It just kills a lot of birds.
No.
I'm serious. It does.
Well, any structure does, but these are very slow-moving, large.
Well, the ones that they've had here in California have had a tremendous problem with killing birds. They're not slow enough, they're chewing up birds. So hopefully they'll find some way to maybe mesh around it or something so that they're protected.
But in any case, that wind power and solar power and geothermal energy, like in Iceland, where they drill into the ground and able to use the heat generated deep inside the earth to produce electricity.
Yeah. Sure. Now, I want to end the show by having you and then me talk about how people should protect themselves, because there are some practical things you can
Absolutely.
Do aside from not living near a power plant,
well,
moving away from.
That.
And,
right. I mean, right now I couldn't sell my beautiful apartment that's only 25 miles downwind from a series of nuclear reactors here in Pittsburgh.
Uh-oh.
So what we have to do is we have to find ways to lower the intake. And one, there are a number of things you can do. One is to buy water which is treated by reverse osmosis, which removes about 95-98% of all the heavy elements, including strontium, lead, uranium, plutonium, and all the other damning, very serious isotopes. Or the other way is to buy bottled water, which has been distilled. But ordinary well water from some distant mountain may not be good enough, but it is important it's possible to install a reverse osmosis unit under your sink, which I've done, and then for a few $100s, at least when I bought it 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, the good ones tend to be about $350. The issue with reverse osmosis is there's two things. How much wastewater it produces. You want one that doesn't produce a lot of wastewater, and those tend to run above $300.
It doesn't produce a lot of
wastewater. Well, some of them do. Some do.
Well,
some of them waste.
Mine doesn't.
No, what I'm saying is that they vary.
It stays in the filter.
Well, what I'm saying is they vary, and an inexpensive one actually wastes a lot of water, and a more expensive one will not do that. So that's one thing for people to look at when they're buying them.
Yeah, but an ordinary carbon filter is not good enough.
Clearly. And of course, no milk from the San Joaquin Valley. No milk from Big Ag, you know.
Right.
Large agricultural milk products. No industrially raised milk.
Adults don't really need milk. They can get their calcium from other sources. I'm sure we all know that. And then we can use other substitutes for certain materials, especially ocean fish now, deep ocean fish that's caught offshore.
So no salmon?
Salmon spends most of its time in the deep ocean, and that's good. Sardines and herring, and these are all now, because bomb testing in the atmosphere is no longer polluting the oceans, it's only near the nuclear plants in the bays where clams and oysters are often contaminated,
And runoff from the Sierras.
And runoff from the nuclear plants, from the air emissions, which get into the soil and end up in the Mississippi River for a large part of the United States.
If you will, let me give people a little bit of advice, too. Protecting the thyroid, people often ask me if they've been kind of backed into having to have some kind of procedure with radiation, what do I do now? And here's some generalized advice. I spoke with Richard Cunyon, and some of it was stuff I already knew, but I kind of ran it by him, and it was what I thought. He mentioned also there have been lots of efforts to find antidotes to general fusion products, and it's not been so successful. But
antioxidants are helpful.
Well, that's where I'm going to get to. So if you will, let me just do this. The first step is, if you've just been exposed, protect the thyroid by taking some potassium or sodium iodide, not iodine, but iodide. It's available by prescription from a pharmacy. It's called SSKU. It's also used to take microbes out of water. It's used to sterilize water. So it's potassium iodide. Iodide, not iodine, SSKU, and a very small amount. You don't want to overdose on this, particularly if you already are on thyroid replacement. You want to be very careful with your dosing of this. It might be just a few drops in a glass of water one or two times a day. What happens is that fission products and fluorides and bromides replace the iodide, which is a natural substance in the thyroid. So a short course after exposure will help to prevent thyroid damage. Again, cautions for people on replacement dose. Remember that if you are on taking thyroid, and if you're taking any that has the thyroid hormone T3 in it, that's already iodine, so you don't want to overdose yourself because that can cause symptoms. But for any other person who's not already being treated for a thyroid problem, a short course of potassium iodide if you know that you've been exposed. And then to the antioxidants, as Dr. Schoenglass just mentioned. The way that antioxidants work is they replace, they give up their electrons to damaged molecules. So all of the sulfur-containing amino acids, vitamin C, N-acetylated cysteine, NAC, alpha-lipoic acid, these all raise glutathione levels, which is the chemical that your body is your main detoxification chemical. But if your methylation is hosed up, so what I was talking about is if you have inherited, and I suspect this is from radiation, a problem with methylation, and it's methylation has to do with donation of carbon atoms, and it's essential for your detoxification pathways to work. If it doesn't work well, what happens is that people have a need for much higher doses of folic acid and B6 and B12 and possibly even some betaine, which is trimethylglycine, which is also very high in beets and spinach. But people often will need very much higher doses than what you find in a normal vitamin of folic acid, extra B6, extra B12, possibly some extra K. But again, eating spinach will give you the K and the TMG. You also need animal protein to synthesize all of these things and to make the methylation process work. Now, I'm sure that this is going to inflame some vegetarians, but I would remind vegetarians that if you're not a strict vegetarian, you can include some eggs and some cheese along with your non-animal protein to help with this process. Methylation, I believe, is damaged by exposure to radiation fission products. So those are my pieces of advice. Thanks for being patient with me, Dr. Schoenglass.
Well, that's fine. I fully agree, because we now know from the studies by Dr. Petkow in Canada that protracted exposures lead to the free radicals, which can be diminished by having plenty of antioxidants in your diet.
So I'm going to have to let you go here, but I think we ended our last show on a positive note. You said that despite everything that you've seen in your lifetime, now you're in your 80s, you're still optimistic that we're going to pull ourselves out of this mess, huh?
Yes, very much so, because many nations are now going to alternative methods of energy. They're eliminating nuclear reactors. And one thing we have done as a result of the development of the bomb, we have not had another terrible world war in which 5,000 to 10,000 people a day on average died, and that we no longer have.
Oh, I don't know what to say about that. I think what we're doing in Iraq is pretty comparable. But anyway, I understand
well,
what you're saying.
Obviously, but the scale is so much less, fortunately, for the world.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for spending this hour with us, Dr. Schoenglass. Again, you can find information about his research at radiation.org. Thank you again for your time.
Well, you're welcome. I thank you very much for having me.
I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream, a full hour stream of this week's show, our archive CD copies. Everything is there at yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Remember, Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Jeff Fawcett and Lena Berman. And being informed, it not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.